Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXRadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You are listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It. Today, we with your hosts, Scott and Maria. Unfortunately, Scott is not in today, and I am going solo today. But today, we're talking to Andrew Wells. He's a mental health rehab tech, too, and working for Imperial County Behavioral Health. And he's going to be talking today about the system. So, Andrew, can you give us a really short overview of what the system is?
Well, I guess the short and sweet of it is that it's a socialization program for children from ages 7 to 12 who have issues as far as, making friends, positively socializing with other children. I mean, we could be talking about fighting. We could be talking about doing simple annoying behaviors because they want to have the child be their friend and they don't know how. So we more or less what we do is we take the children and we try and re-educate them on how to make friends, on how to respond appropriately to social situations. Whether it's they're being picked on by some other kids, what they're supposed to do instead of what they're used to doing. So, and then as we go through teaching them this, they're reinforced by poker chips. But the poker chips actually have a point value to them. And then they use those points to buy prizes and other things. So they have a drive to do the positive behavior. So it's not only that we're trying to teach it, but they're also driven to learn it so that they can earn something.
What is the benefit of having this system to the child?
Well, the child, the neat thing about the program is that we see results because it's an everyday thing, either after school or in the summer. It's between 8 to 12. What we see is we see results right away. The child starts learning the material and they start coming to the program saying, like, I have friends now. Like, oh, I made a friend on the block, I was able to not get bullied today at school. I was able to do, it's really neat as a staff member to be able to see them grow in that way, And that's usually the best result of the client, is that they start seeing, wow, I'm making friends, or man, my teacher really isn't out to get me. Maybe it really was my behavior all along, and they start changing it, and then all of a sudden their grades are no longer B's and F's. They're starting to be C's and B's, and they're just like really excited about.
What about benefits to the family having this?
Well, the neat thing is that with Lisa Sands, we meet with. It's not just regular case management. I mean, we have the program which runs every day of the week, and then we have two visits a month that we do with the family, trying to teach them ways to to facilitate the program. We'd like to have a behavior modification system in the home so that when they're not in program, they're being reinforced at home for their positive behaviors. So a lot of times the family, usually sees a lot of negative behaviors, and it's just a large focus on negative, negative, negative. And then all of a sudden, they start seeing, he cleans his room all the time. And they're working with these contingency plans, and starting to see, maybe it was one of my other kids that has some problems. Maybe that's the deal. My kid's doing better.
What kind of interventions? Can you give me just one example of the interventions that you use or the therapy or the treatment you use in the CBT in the home setting?
Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, what is CBT?
CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy, and it incorporates a wide variety of different techniques, which have the child gradually or the individual gradually change their behavior in order to have them succeed?
Well, today we are talking again with Andrew Wells. He is a mental health rehab tech 2 working at the Risk Defense. And he's going to tell us a little bit more about Risk Defense and on cognitive behavioral therapy, one of the interventions that they utilize at Risk Defense. And we'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
And we're talking to Andrew Wells. He's a mental health rehab tech too, and he works for the FISTSAM. So you can just tell us a little bit more about FISTSAM and what it incorporates and what is the criteria, the referral, everything. So let's start with the criteria. Or how does a child get admitted into the FISTSAM? Is it through a referral system, and who can refer them? Could it be just, let's say, a parent that is listening to this radio show today?
Well, to start off, it's usually if a child has concerns as far as how they interact socially, you know, the biggest thing is that they would need to be cognitive to behavioral health. You know, that's one of the I guess must have for the program. But usually they're referred by teachers. But parents can also do the referrals too. And it's just based on what they see. We like to see like a spectrum of behaviors, not just occurring in the home setting but also the school setting.
What kind of behaviors is it? Is it, you know, something that is not normal, but then again, what is normal?
Yeah, exactly. the thing is that the kids with no friends, a lot of the times the clients that I receive, that's when we're doing our initial client assessment, they're saying, like, I'm like, well, how many friends do you have? How often do you play with them during a week? And they're like, zero friends.
Okay. What is the ages of these kids?
It's 7 to 12.
Wow, they have no friends, though.
Yeah, so that's, and usually, the other thing is that they don't have to just be referred by the school or by the parent. If they're already applying to behavioral health, when we do that initial client assessment and we see stuff like that, there's, you know, certain things that we consider to be red flags.
Mm-hmm.
First, if they meet the age criteria, and second is some of the stuff that they say about, you know, well, my child is fighting at school all the time. He's being suspended for fights. You know, he says that other kids are picking on him, but I hear different reports from the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's, okay, so we start seeing these problems that are occurring in all settings. You know, they're fighting with their siblings, they're fighting with other kids, and then they start saying, well, I don't have any friends. You know, I don't have any friends that I play with. And it's like, you ask them why, they have no idea. You know, they have no idea why they don't have friends. They just end up playing by themselves in the playground. That's usually when we'll make a referral and say, we'll bring it to our treatment team and say, look, you know, this kid seems to be having poor social skills. He's not interacting appropriately with others. You know, he's being suspended. That's when me, the doctor, our nurse, and then our treatment team of other nurses and our supervisors and our clinicians, we'll then make a decision as far as will the child be referred. But most of the time, that's where it goes through. We do give referral forms out to the schools so that they can fill them out and send them to us. But a lot of times, you know, it always gets brought back to our treatment team as far as deciding who's gonna who meets the criteria for the program and different focuses as far as for the program for the child.
When you were talking earlier about the age criteria, you know, you said it was
Seven to twelve,
and you know they have all these different behaviors. They're fighting. When you take it to team, you find out that there's other underlying issues, or is there something chemically and chemical imbalance in their brain, or why these behaviors? Why are they acting like this?
Well, a lot of it has to do with their diagnosis. What their diagnosis is, you know, with the ADHD, the children are so impulsive and so inattentive. They're not, you know, they're not really absorbing. They're absorbing everything from their environment, but at the same time, they're absorbing nothing. You know, they're not really retaining it. And they're doing these behaviors just based on a, you know, they think about it, so they do it. And that's actually one of the behaviors that our program, we have some activities that we do with the children to help them so that they can stop and think before they just act, which is, you know, really common. That's one of the biggest, one of the biggest battles with most of our children is just to get them to break down the impulsive, from the thought to the action, instead of, you know, the thought, then actually considering what they're going to do, what the consequences are of what they're going to do, and then deciding on what the action is.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit about what this defense does, or the benefits of this defense to these children that do get admitted to the FIS defense.
Well, I mean, the benefits are what we had said before, you know, to the client, to the school, you know, to the home, you know, there's a bunch of benefit. But for the child individually, I would say the benefit is just to be reintegrated mostly into the social environment. You know, whether it's playing with the kids in their community, or it's playing with the kids at school, or it's even interacting with their own siblings at home and their parents.
Yeah, I know that they encouraged us to talk to these. Did
somebody
stay there through all those years?
No, actually, what ends up happening is we do the intake process where we do the review of the behaviors and we rate them. We actually give them rating scales to see if they qualify for the program and areas where we're going to actually focus for that child. But what happens is we do a 30-day evaluation after they come in to see if they're investing into the program, if they're taking on the information, they're retaining it, and then we go for a 3-month to just see like a more of a recap. Okay, this is where we are, this is where we'd like to go, or if at that point in time they are doing better, we're going to start doing discharge planning. We're going to start saying, okay, this is how we're going to phase the child out, how to have them reintegrate, transition back into school more time, until, you know, eventually he's no longer in the program. And then in school full time, but it's not just a big like, okay, you're in program, now you're not in program anymore. You know, we like to have it gradual so they don't feel that you know, stress of losing one environment.
So what happens in program? Tell me a little bit about what happens in the program. What bring those, you know, that
3-hour span? During our 3-hour span, we start by the kids. When we first identify the children and we intake them into the program, we start with picking target behaviors from school, 3 of them, and 3 target behaviors from school. Upon entering the program, they're rated by their parent and they're rated by the teacher as far as how well they did that day. So when they come in, we take down what their points are, you know, based on how well they did on the 3 target behaviors from home and the 3 target behaviors from school, and that starts their points for the day. Mm-hmm. So they come in, they read for a little while, then we start the program, and usually what we start the program doing is we just record the points again onto another sheet, which is going to end up being their sheet to buy. Like their paycheck, you know.
So you said
they get
poker chips.
Yes, but those poker chips all are balanced out into points at the end of the day. They're all turned back in. So that's what goes onto that paper. And after that, we do a focus of the week, which is usually having to do with social situations. Either social situations that we see occurring in the program with the kids, like maybe arguing or. Maybe resisting bullying. That's one that we do a lot of the time, is resisting peer pressure, resisting bullying, because a lot of times these kids don't know what to do. You know, they're being bullied, and their instinct is fight or flight. And sometimes the flight means not attending school for a couple days because they're so anxious about attending. So we do like a little social, we do that social skill building thing right there. and then we start with our activities. We have three main activities for the day, and they all deal with our social skills curriculum. Our main curriculum is called Second Step, and it's dealing from everything from anger management, impulse control, you name it. It covers a wide spectrum of children's behaviors. So it's very thorough, and it's really nice for us because the kids get into it, and then they have there's role plays at the end.
So that you apply to all kids?
Well, I would say that.
I'm thinking about my daughter, you know, that reward system is not working at all with my 3-year-old.
No.
Okay. Well, he wants everything.
Well, a lot of times, the reason why we start at 7 to 12 is really because our curriculum is based on those age groups. That Second Step really incorporates those age groups well. And we also want to give them enough time to be integrated into the social environment. Because, some teachers right away want kids to be referred in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And that would be nice, but if we had older kids, and then kindergartners, it's not a good match. They're not going to be able to identify with the same things that a kid really in second grade, which is what we're looking at, a second grader has already been in school for kindergarten, first grade, and now is struggling in second grade or had to struggle through first grade.
How do you manage that? Having a 7-year-old and a 12-year-old,
You would think that there would be a really big difference between the two.
Like a 12-year-old is a preteen.
Yeah, a 12-year-old is definitely a preteen. But the behaviors are so similar that they all start learning off of each other. They build a really neat social structure in the program. The kids get to the place where they know each other. And that's where they start building the friends. It doesn't matter whether the child is 10, 12, or the child is as young as 7, but they all identify with each other because they're all in the program.
How do you manage, a child that is very aggressive and has been constantly fighting, how do you handle that behavior?
Well, the basis is that, we just try with some of the behaviors, some of the tantruming, it's best to ignore it, to not give them the attention, because the attention getting behavior, they want our attention, they want to give us a response, make us have an emotional response. And when we deny it to them, and it continues, and we continue to deny them that emotional response, and just giving them straight directives, okay, you need to go over here, you need to go over there. Or if they refuse, then we just remove the kids from that setting, and then they're stuck by themselves if that's what they want to do in the program. Mm-hmm. Now, usually they stop those more aggressive behaviors within the first 2 months. We're very consistent. Mm-hmm. The nice thing about the program is that it's all based on consistency and immediate rewards. So they understand that throwing a tantrum is really gonna mess up their chances of being able to get what they really need or want for that day. So they're just like, I don't wanna ruin my day by having a tantrum. I'd rather just go and control it than just blow up and lose all the ability to buy for that day. But usually you have a quiet time room, we do send them in there. But the neat thing is especially with the kids we have now, I think they're going in there on their own. If they identify that when they're coming into the program they're in a bad mood, they just say, I'm not going to risk blowing up on another kid because it's not their fault. It's something going on with me. So they say, can I be excused? Can I go in here and just take some time to cool down? And say, yeah, sure, That's not something that they're going to lose points for. That's a positive behavior.
Identify it. Learn what the trigger is. Today we're talking to with Andrew Wells. He's a mental health rehab tech, and we've been talking about the Vincent Stamps, and we'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM Radio Bilingue.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It with Scott and Maria. Unfortunately, Scott is not in today, so your host today is Maria White. Our phone number for the association is 337-8874, and we are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. And today we're talking to Andrew Wells, who's a mental health rehab tech, and he works at Sister Sam's. And we had just, in the previous segment, we were talking about how, what is the criteria, the age group of these kids, which is 7 to 12, and also who can refer them or how they get referred, and then the curriculum that you had, which was second step. But how do you incorporate all this under the umbrella of
cognitive behavioral therapy? Well, you know, a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy deals with needing rewards and denial of, denial of negative behaviors. Mm-hmm. You know, you're more or less ignoring the negative behaviors and only focusing on the positive ones. You know, the negative ones do end up with consequences, but the reward for the positive overweighs the consequence for the negative. You know, it's like, so all I can think about is wanting to do positive behaviors in order to, you know, more or less escape whatever the negative behavior is. Like, I don't even need to use the negative behavior anymore because my positive behavior is going to get me noticed, it's going to get me verbal praise, it might get me, like a reward praise, like they might be able to go out and do something that they don't normally get to do, you know, kind of earning their trust back, earning their, you know, their credibility back with their family or their school. You know, they just aren't, you know, I can't remember what it was, but we had one of our students got a student of the month.
Wow.
And he was just so excited. It was just the biggest thing in the world to him because before that he was, you know, in trouble.
Always being told that it always been
right. Sent to the office.
Sent to the office.
And then all of a sudden to go from there to, you know, student of the month. Like,
he was kind of the kids that never got the rewards, never got a prize because they were always misbehaving.
Yeah, they couldn't just do the simple task. You know, let alone, you know, the more elaborate task, which we get you noticed first, you know, something like the student of the month. Mm-hmm. Some of these kids are getting, like, most improved, you know, from their schools. But the CBT, you know, really incorporates, you know, it really pushes for the child to get that type of verbal, you know, or any kind of recognition, really. They start seeking it, you know, instead of seeking the negative recognition that they would for, you know,
yeah,
for being the class clown, you know, or whatever the scenario might be. You know, the CBT in the home is where we really start seeing the benefit, too.
And CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is one of the evidence-based
right
treatments that behavioral health has pushed for the last couple of years.
Yes.
And it's worked. It's effective. And that's one of the reasons why it's being implemented as it is now. And CBT, or known as cognitive behavioral therapy, is not just for children, for everyone, all age groups.
Well, yeah, it's for, you know, a lot of us use it, you know, all employees of behavioral health, we use it on ourselves too.
Find your spouses,
your spouses,
family.
Family, children, you know, it has like a, it has an umbrella effect. You know, once you understand it and you learn it and you start practicing it, you know, at work with, you know, an age group that you're, you know, for me, you know, as a MERT, I do the, you know, whatever my age group is, I'm practicing it with it. Well, over a period of time, I start noticing that, hey, I've been doing it at work for the last 3 months. You know, when I first started with behavioral health, that was one of the things that I noticed. Like, wow, I'm doing it all over the place. I wasn't even really aware of it. So it gets to be something that we just do all the time.
Yeah.
We just see the progress, and we're just like, oh, wow.
And then once you've implemented with children, with kids, and then, as you say, you've seen the progress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from being in trouble constantly, being the kid in the woods, that he's always crying, to
right.
Right. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. It's a really big deal for the kids. And it just reinforces what we've been teaching them for that period of time.
Now, the children are there at Mr. Sims for every day, Monday through Friday, correct?
Right. Yes.
For 3 hours?
Three hours. In the summer, it's 8:30 to 11:30, and during the school year, it's 1 to 4.
And they're being, the conversational therapy and the curriculum is being implemented and emphasized every day.
Mm-hmm.
What about the family? Because the child might be modifying their behavior, but the family might be
facilitating negative dysfunctional.
How, you might make some positive changes or improvements in that child, but then they might not unlearn it, or they might not unlearn it.
Yes. And that's where our responsibility as a nurse really takes effect, is that's when we need to work with the family on, on helping the child make the progress. Because it's not really, it inevitably makes the family a more cohesive unit, But, I like to start off, since I started my career here at Behavioral Health, I started in Beast of. So I started looking at some of the tools that they use. So I adopted my own type of charts based on the CBT model. The contingency charts is what we call. But it's just based on the same thing. It's based on a reward. It's based on immediate rewards. I developed tokens that I give to the family members to give the child.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of poker chips, they earn little dollars with their names on it that I designed. And the kids just love it, and the parents are like, oh, wow, it was this easy to change my child's behavior. Sometimes the problem is compliance, because the parents like, well, it didn't work in the first week, so I'm not going to do it anymore. It's like saying to them that,
And also, I'm not going to excuse it, but there's sometimes the parents never learn the
problem.
It's not that there weren't bad parents.
Right.
It's just that there's ways of... techniques, but raising the child, be consistent. They need to be consistent. Sometimes you scold or you put a discipline in, sometimes you don't for the same behavior. And for the child, learns, wait a minute, probably they're not going to do anything. Last time they did, but last time, three times, they haven't said anything right now, so I'll continue doing it.
Or, I've been taking the trash out this whole week and no one has said
nothing.
No one has said anything. I never used to take it out, and now I'm taking it out, and no one cares. So
why are you doing it anymore?
Yeah. And that's when it's just constant. The nice thing is we see these kids every day, so we're able to tell them, they tell us a problem that they're having at home. That's one of our group sessions actually that we have at least once a week. Is they tell us about their problems at home. They tell us about a problem like that. We go and we address it with the parents. I know you're trying as hard as you can, because I really believe that all parents try with everything that they have, just not all the time until they get.
I'm one of them too. I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know if I'm doing it right or wrong.
Yeah, sometimes when we
I'm just hoping that it comes out okay.
Yeah, sometimes when we have children, there's really no specific manual for that type of personality.
No, there is.
Especially if the personality is similar to yours, it makes the challenge greater.
Unfortunately, she has a personality of both my husband and mine, so bad.
Oh, yeah. So you have to switch. You have to keep on switching up.
I know.
Yeah.
But it's difficult as it is. It is hard. It's not easy to have. It's very rewarding. It's challenging. But I'm so glad that, you guys and the fans and the child rehab can support the family.
Yes. That's when we're talking about giving the child the positive recognition too. you know, a lot of times these parents aren't aware that they're doing positive things with the children as well. So this is where the CBT actually transfers into the home setting, and the parents start realizing, oh, like, I do have strengths. Oh, I am actually doing a good job as a parent. I'm not a horrible person. You know, and then we start working with them with, like, yeah, you're doing really well. Maybe if you try this, maybe this might work a little bit better for you. And they start getting, not only does the child get that confidence, you know, of, wow, like, I can change my behavior. I can modify the way that I interact with others. Mm-hmm. But the parents also learn, wow, you know, I learned something, you know, so valuable to my family. They start doing the charts and the whole system with all the siblings. And then all of a sudden their family is like completely cohesive unit. Which is really neat. It's really neat.
Everybody benefits.
Right.
But they're on the front part too. That child is the children spend every day with the teacher also.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The office of teachers is I've always said my hands hats off to the teachers for listening. They are great. It's amazing. They have a special calling. It's very, I tried it for a year to be a teacher and I'll never do it again. It's very hard. So how can you, do you assist also teachers?
Well, they're one of our, you know, they're one of our targeted, you know, of course, targeted groups as far as in helping, you know, we're talking about helping the family, you know, we also help the school as well. You know, we help the teacher as far as, you know, we let them know daily as far as what the child is doing, like maybe the child's doing some behaviors he's not getting caught for. Mm-hmm. But then we try and make sure
it's hard. Yeah. It's hard because
well,
they
have got 30 kids in your class. And, you
that's
know,
what I'm saying. It's hard because I had 30 kids. And, well, I did. It was junior high kids.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just, you're trying to manage a classroom with all these different kids, and you're trying to do your curriculum,
right.
And, you know, they have their standards, their goals that they have to reach,
and sometimes these kids do fall by the wayside.
And it's not by any, you know, purpose or that they, you know, teachers don't care. It's the opposite. It's just they also have to manage the rest of the 29 other kids.
Yeah, it's overwhelming, you know, especially when this child needs so much attention, yet they can't give it. You know, it's just really frustrating. And, you know, that's the luxury of having them out from 1 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
It gives us that time where the, you know, apart from the core curriculum, because they try and teach the math and the English in the morning. And they do kind of like extra stuff in the afternoon. So our kids are able to kind of go away from the extra stuff, get the core curriculum, and then come with us. But we help the students and the teachers. We do the Bible core plans.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we're doing referrals out to special ed. You know, we see that, you know, over the last couple of years, this child has failed, you know, and it's not just, you know, directed at the teacher, but it's just, you know, the teacher hadn't really had a lot of time to focus on that child. So we're doing, you know, referrals to special ed. We're telling the parents, we're educating the parents about what they need to do in order to get the child tested, you know, what, you know, the steps, you know, as far as having the SSTs.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these parents don't know they have an SST. And a lot of these teachers want the SST, but they're unsure about the involvement of the parent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's really just drawing, is just kind of a line.
SST stand for?
Students they teach. Where all the teachers get together and then they all discuss the child, the principal's there, they discuss the discipline, they discuss all that stuff. They just decide what they're going to do from there. You know, we do the 504s, which is the Americans with Disabilities Act, 1977. We do that and we get them set up with accommodations in the classroom. Sometimes we even draw enough attention to get an extra aid to come into the classroom to help the those certain amount of kids. So, you know, then it's, you know, then the child definitely benefits. And the teacher's benefiting. Like, finally, I get some help, you know.
You know, I did some, I remember, going back your time, staying with the support for the teacher. I remember when I was doing substitute teaching, and when I substituted, I did substitute from kindergarten all the way to high school, and I could tell which one, you know, they would tell me so-and-so needs to go to business hours in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So come and pick him up. Or I guess they would go with the child in the air and go. And I don't know which one it was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I never knew these. This was the first day I met
the
name of who knows. But then I just saw the behavior, and I knew it stands out. It was that it was very distracting. It was very distracting for the other kids too. And you know, just, I mean, when that child left, it kind of
the rest of the afternoon. Sure, sure. You don't really know.
How many students do you have at this time?
Currently, we have 8, but we go all the way up to 15. You know, we like to have the max amount possible because every student that we add into the program gives the other kids, that's a new personality. So we have, if we have 10, 12, 13 kids. Mm-hmm. You know, that's 13 different personalities that the kids that are having trouble interacting with the other
kids.
Yeah,
they're having trouble themselves.
Right, and they're actually able to learn from that type of personality. So, say we have a child that likes to fight or likes to argue or is defiant, you know, as far as oppositional. Mm-hmm. These kids learn to how to be around that child. And not only be around them and tolerate them, but be around them and value them and make friends with them. You know, learn what the positives are about that child. And that's another way that they build build the cohesiveness in the program. You know, all the kids seem to, you know, really enjoy each other's presence, you know, or company. But yeah, the more kids that we have, the better it is for just the one, you know, one kid benefits.
They can all,
you know, all benefit from each other.
They all benefit from each other.
So the lower amount of kids we have in the program, of course, they're going to learn from the 7 other ones. But you know, think about, you know, there's 14 kids, and that's even more kids that they get to learn to be around, and they also the size, you know, the size of the kids that are around them. You know,
is there a reason why you have only 0.08? Is it or because you've graduated some of them?
You know, we've even graduated a few. You know, we have even more graduating after the summer. We've, you know, like you said, the turnout for the program is just, you know, tremendous. Ever since I started, you know, doing piece of sands, and then going back to doing just some old time case management, and then going back to piece of sands again, I start seeing, like, wow, like, I wish just in the regular case management that I could see this kind of immediate result that I get to see in the Lisa Sands program.
And this is more intense.
Yeah.
You have every single day.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it's very much intensive. And because it's so intense, you see that progress right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see it just, it blows you away. It makes you satisfied with the work that you've done,
mm-hmm.
which for us as employees is very important, you know.
Yeah, it is. So then, okay, this kid is going back, it's getting integrated to the school, now they have friends, now they're playing with them, they're playing with them.
Their academics are coming up.
Their academics are becoming to the love.
Yeah. They're starting to learn, so they're not feeling like they're behind anymore. Like they're less of a student than their peer over here that's doing, you know, seems to be over excelling at mostly everything. You know, they're not labeling themselves. You know, they know what their strengths are. They know what their weaknesses are. So, and then we continue to work with that. You know, after they exit the program, usually, like I said, it's about, you know, anywhere in between 3 and 6 months, we'd like to see them exit the program, you know, or at least at the 6-month meeting, we have a transition plan for them.
Have you had somebody more than 6 months?
Oh, I don't remember the last time we had someone longer than 6 months.
But if it's required
it's based on need, you know, and yes, of course, everything goes back to our treatment team. Yeah, everything needs to, you know, feedback from others is, you know, our treatment team is very important.
Okay.
very important for who we, you know, for the population we deal with.
And the reason why I was asking that is it's longer than 6 months to come to a point where, or have you had a child that, you know what, every type of intervention that you provided, it's not working for,
well,
in that case, what do you do?
Well, you know, that's, we, first of all, we have to decide why it's not working, you know, and then we got to, you know, that's usually something that happens in between that, you know, first to 6 months. You know, we've determined already why, you know, why this certain intervention isn't working. You know, maybe the parent has decided, you know, I don't want to start these on medication. I want to try this first. And maybe it might just be like, you know what? You know, we've had him in our program for 4 months, and there's not enough improvement. You know, the child deserves more improvement. You know, he deserves to have the help of a medication to aid him in making progress. So we're, you know, usually, like I said, we don't really exit kids that don't make progress, and we usually see it within that 6 month frame. You know, it's amazing. I know we had one kid recently that I had when he was 4 years old, and to see the amount of progress that he made, I never, you know, I'd say that we're all optimistic with
you
that.
You had before?
I had him since he was 4 years old when I first started
working
for Behavior Homes. Yes. And then to see where he was at when he graduated the program recently, I just seriously, it takes my breath away realizing that child could make that kind of improvement.
What diagnosis did he or she have?
It was he, and he has a large variety of diagnoses, everything from conduct disorder to, gosh, I can't even remember all the diagnoses, but, you know, ADHD was just one of the few, you know, and to see that he had just went from being this kid that couldn't seem to control his aggressive urges to someone who's, you know, is doing the breathing techniques in the timeout room, you know, without needing, you know, a bunch of coaching, people be right around him becoming more independent. It was just like, whoa.
It's amazing, this program, and I wish it could be in every school, in every school valley-wide. Because you see so many kids that they grow up that they didn't get the benefits, you know, learn. They were never exposed to this class ever, and they end up at one of the community schools because of constantly fighting, just into trouble, not working with juvenile hall. You know, these kids, you know, they are incarcerated because of assault, fighting, financial violence, and they said they're not going to do it again, they're going to change, they get out from juvenile hall,
and hours.
Back because of that impulsiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of them probably do have ADHD. They have, you know, a lot of them go undiagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't get the medication, they don't get the treatment,
right.
They don't get the intervention.
And that's really unfortunate for them. You know, they really miss out on being able to see them make progress. So they you know, their confidence in themselves as well,
mm-hmm.
You know. If they just start realizing I do have strengths, I do have the ability to change my behavior, then as soon as they start making just minor changes, they start seeing the, you know, it just starts hearing questions.
The important part is getting them early.
Yes.
Getting them early, and that's where this defense is so important.
Yeah, that's, you know, depending on when we get the kid, you know, usually, you know, as far as age-wise, that's usually a good indication about how well they do. But, I mean, and also, you know, I've had kids on my regular caseload just doing the CBT with them and working with the families and stuff. I've seen 17-year-olds turn around within, you know, within the 6 month period in time. So, I mean, it works for everyone. I just see that they have to work a little bit harder. Whereas kids are able to be molded a little bit better.
Yeah,
they're still in that learning process.
The CEO has learned that behavior for, and if they didn't,
yes,
have that behavior,
yeah,
for many more years than a 7-year-old.
Yeah, 7-year-olds just right fresh, you know, fresh with the behaviors, really.
If our listeners are interested in this exam, how can they get in contact, or how can they get more information?
If any of our listeners are interested, if they would need to go down to to one of our behavioral clinics, and if they already have a child in the system, then it would just be based on asking their doctor, asking their nurse, you know, asking their case manager if they end up having a case manager.
Mm-hmm.
Just asking them, like, tell me a little bit about it. We have pamphlets on the programs that are available in our waiting rooms and every clinic that we run. So it's just on a basis of just come on in and ask.
Or they can call 482.
Yeah.
4000.
4000. Yes.
I can't forget that one. Well, thank you very much, Andrew. Thank you so much for talking about this event and the pandemic. This is a good service. I mean, the benefits are our children. It's our children because, you know, they are going to grow up, and if we can get this treatment intervention early on, we can avoid a lot of the issues that we're facing right now, the overcrowding, all the way to overcrowding in prisons, which is everything. So
that's the goal.
Thank you for working very hard over there at this time and helping all these kids, and maybe I'll tell you to come by my house and give some CBD to my
daughter.
Thank you so much. Next week, we have Mr. Jim Shin, and he's going to be talking about sunshine counseling. And he is a well-known person here in the Valley. He's a licensed clinical social worker, and he's also a counselor at the Anza Elementary School in Calexico. So, it'll be a great show. Listen to us next Thursday at 7:30.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.